You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us a text, voicemails, anything you got for us. It's going to be on tomorrow's episode. Pushing back all of our mailbag. Normally we do it today. Wednesday is usually our mailbag segment. Usually it's an entire episode dedicated to your voicemails, your text messages. We have Danny Parkins from 670 The Score. You hear him Monday through Friday, weekdays with McNeil and Parkins on the McNeil and Parkins Show. And also now nationally, CBS Sports Radio, Sirius 206, 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Sundays. So check him out there. So Danny Parkins is also always great to talk basketball with, diehard Bulls fan. So we're going to push mailbag back to Thursday's episode, so tomorrow's episode. But before we get to that interview, just a few housekeeping notes here. So I mentioned it on Twitter yesterday, last night, asked for some feedback. And look, Locked On Bulls listeners, for those that listen to us every single day, have been listening to us for a year, 6 months, 4 months, it's the beginning of this season, or have been here since day one with Matt and I. The feedback that you guys give us for this show, whether it's simple things, whether it's things that you guys really like about this show, things that we can really improve on, no matter what it is, you guys always really give us great feedback, and it's always given us an opportunity to improve and grow our show. And I've heard you. I've heard you about the intro, and that's exactly what we're going to do. I've been working on the intro for now about a week or so, tweaking, fixing, learning what you guys like, what you guys don't like, and look, the intro has definitely needed an update. So that's coming next couple of days. I'm still working on it a little bit, so that's coming. Whether it's through DMs, you want to DM me at Jordan C. Malley on Twitter, you want to drop us a text at 331-979-1369 on our text and voicemail line, whatever it is, we're always looking to improve the show, always looking for constructive criticism, feedback from you guys, because you guys are the part of the reason why we're able to do this 5 days a week, and without you guys, we're nothing. So the feedback from the listeners, and you guys are the reason. So thank you to everybody that's dropped us a voicemail, that's dropped us a text message, that's sent us a DM, that's dropped us a tweet, and give us honest feedback. And for the good, for the bad, and it's been great. So thank you. Thank you again, seriously. And hey, look, not everything that we do on this show is going to be for everybody, but, you know, doing this 5 days a week, every single week, 52 weeks a year, like, there's going to be things that you guys really enjoy and other things that you guys really don't like. So I understand, and the way that we grow this show and the way that we keep listeners coming back is feedback from you, and you guys are the most important part to this show. So thank you again for everybody who has told us what you guys like and what you don't like. So I've heard you. The intro is coming, a change to that, and there will be updates frequently. I will not let it go 6 months the way it has been before. So I've heard you. So thank you again. One quick note about this interview before we get to it. I had some internet issues this morning recording this episode. Thanks, Comcast. Thanks a lot. But Danny and Matt were really great on this, and the most important part is the content that we're getting out to you. And the most important part is Danny on this interview. So he was really great, and Matt did a fantastic job. So you're going to hear me pop in and out from time to time. So just wanted to make you guys aware of that. Once again, thanks, Comcast. But without further ado, here is Danny Parkins.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls one of the hardest working people in sports talk radio right now. He is Danny Parkins, co-host of the McNeil and Parkins Show on 670 The Score here in Chicago, weekdays 1 to 6. And he also recently added to his resume a Sunday evening 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. show for CBS Sports Radio's national station, Sirius 206. Danny, welcome back to Lockdown Bulls, man. It's been a minute. I feel like we haven't talked to you since last summer before all of this blew up in our faces.
Yeah, you guys are doing the Lord's work talking Bulls every single day, and I assume watching every single game. So I appreciate you guys having me back on. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, so we just heard from the Bulls head coach Jim Boylan talking with your colleagues David Haw and Mully on the Mully and Haw show this morning, 670 The Score. Pretty interesting comments. Let's start with the one that made me raise an eyebrow the most, though. When asked about the Bulls and what they might be able to do as far as pitching free agents this summer, Boylan said something along the lines of, well, if it's, and the Bulls are looking for people who want to come here and buy into our system and play hard and play hard defense and honor the Bulls organization and what this organization means to this city. And I feel like I was not the only person listening to that interview who winced, because it seemed kind of out of touch to me as far as how NBA free agency works these days. What did you think about that comment?
I thought the whole interview lacked a little bit of grounding in reality, if I'm being perfectly honest. And I'll listen to it again this afternoon as we sit here recording it on a Wednesday morning. But I just, like, the biggest factor for free agents is money, and then normally the next biggest is a shot to win. And the Bulls will have the money, but they won't likely have a shot to win. And so they're not going to be a destination for marquee free agents, I wouldn't think. And if they are, they'll have some serious questions about how Jim Boylan is running the show here. And, like, let's just hypothetically, let's say Kevin Durant wanted to leave the Warriors, and for some reason he wanted to come to the Bulls. Like obviously it won't happen, but just hypothetically say that it did. But Kevin Durant said, but I don't want to play for Jim Boylan.
Right.
They would fire Jim Boylan. But, you know, like the player has so much more power than the coach in the modern NBA, especially a coach who admitted, you know, that he doesn't have the pelts on the wall like a Popovich or a Rudy Tomjanovich finally in the conversation today, that I'm not sure how much of a factor he's going to be in all of this. But like what I found most, the whole thing was just interesting to me. Like the tone, it was conversational. It was not confrontational. I would have maybe even liked a little bit more pushback from what he said. Like they asked him all the right questions, but I felt like they let him get away with some just like blatant falsehoods.
Right.
You know, when he said I have never had a confrontation with a player, like, what are you talking about? They almost didn't show up to practice one day early on, and there was a group text and messaging about whether or not they should even show up or if they should mutiny. Like, I've never embarrassed the— you subbed out all five starters not once but twice in a game.
Yeah.
Like,
in a game that you lost by like 50 points.
Right. And then said you were doing it to save their legs so that they could practice the next day. And then when they threatened not to practice, you said, oh, we weren't ever going to practice. They just have to trust me. We were going to watch film. Like, no, you didn't put the starters back into that game because you wanted to practice off of a back-to-back. So, like, he's – and then he says he has no regrets about how it started. There was – they contacted the players' union to see what types of, like, action could be taken if they needed to. Like, it was just – so I just – he's just – he's – I think he's a little delusional.
It seems like the delusion about his relationship with players and how much, you know, we're talking about how that affects potential free agent signings moving forward. But not only is it, in my opinion, delusional when you think about what happened this season, as you mentioned, the near mutiny with his players. But he even was talking about how he's always had great relationships with his players dating back to when he was an assistant on this Bulls team, and said, you know, Jimmy Butler had a great relationship with him, Dwayne Wade. And then he paused and I was like, he better not say Rajon Rondo right now. Like, Rajon Rondo got suspended for a game by the team because he threw a towel at Jim Boylan, and he didn't say Rondo. He just repeated Wade's name again, said, oh, well, yeah, so I had a great relationship with him. But when it comes to these big personality, big ego stars in the league, it seems like there's a disconnect with Boylan. And so the next question, Danny, is when you look at what Zach LaVine has said in his growing frustration and speaking openly and honestly to the media, especially during that 10-game losing streak that mercifully just ended, saying things like, we didn't used to be getting blown out every night when we had a healthier, more talented roster. I don't know what's going on. A question that, or a comment that certainly seems to point a finger at Jim Boylan. Do you think LaVine is a talented enough guy and an important enough piece of this team for the Bulls to, in a matter of speaking, pick the player over the coach, which goes back to what you were saying? They picked Hoiberg over Jimmy a couple of years ago. And, you know, we could talk till the cows come home about whether or not that was the right call. But in right now, moving into this offseason, if LaVine were to hypothetically say to the Bulls, hey, look, it's me or Boylan, the Bulls would have no choice but to get rid of Boylan, right?
Probably. Like, I don't think that Zach LaVine is nearly as good of a player as Jimmy Butler, but I also don't think so far Jim Boylan is as good of a coach as Fred Hoiberg. But they also, you know, they didn't extend Jim Boylan. They just gave him more money commensurate with his job responsibility. So I am cautiously optimistic, and this is very cautiously, but I am cautiously optimistic that Jim Boylan is a glorified interim coach, and they're just not saying or labeling him as interim because they do really believe that they need to instill a culture of toughness, practice hard, try hard, accountability.
And he'd have no authority if it were the interim tag.
Exactly. And when Fred Hoiberg gets a job, whether it be in the NBA or in college, that money offsets the money that the Bulls owe him next year, and the perfunctory raise that they gave Jim Boylan is negligible, and they can say, hey, we just traded for Carmelo Anthony and made $900,000, and that'll go towards offsetting that cost. And when they have the number one or number two or number three overall pick in next year's NBA draft, plus a bunch of free agent money, plus whatever you think of the young core of LaVine, Carter, and Markkanen, I'm not even including Chris Dunn at this point, you could then say, all right, see you later, Jim, and we're going to go out and get a real coach who is known for developing talent with a modern offensive system, and we'll sign him to a five-year contract. I'm hopeful that that's going to happen. And if Jim Boylan is the coach in the next year because of money, I'll probably just lose my mind. But that's where I'm at right now.
It certainly seems hard at this point, even thinking about the team paying three coaches, that they could justify bringing Boylan back. Because, look, they talked about, and Paxson specifically, because we all know that Gar's not allowed to talk to the media anymore. When they explained, when Paxson explained the change in coaching, he talked about it being about that culture that you were mentioning and building the right culture and forming the right habits as opposed to bad habits. And really pegging Boylan as the guy they believed it, who could come in and kind of fix some of the issues they saw and ignite some kind of spirit or fire or insert intangible adjective that the team seemed to be missing under Hoiberg. And we have seen this team, as Zach LaVine alluded to, go from bad to worse under Boylan. Their offensive and defensive ratings have both dropped. They're dead last in offensive efficiency in the league right now. And guess what? It's more than that. The eye test checks out. This basketball team offensively is hard to watch. Jordan and I have to watch it 82 times. It's insufferable. So, like, knowing where we are now with Boylan, yes, I think we all agree, those of us watching this team struggle, hope, as you said, that this is just in reality an interim thing and they're going to find a real if they're going to go through a real coaching search this offseason. But do you think that they fired Fred too quickly? Because a lot of people said the team's just starting to get healthy. Fred never really got a shot. I was okay with moving on from Fred. I thought he could never really handle NBA egos, and that is probably, in my opinion, 50% of the job at this level, as much as X's and O's. Do you wish that they hadn't fired Fred, knowing what we know now about Jim?
Yes, of course. Of course. Because it would have just saved us some embarrassment. And I was curious to see what it looked like with Lowry and Carter and Dunn and all of them playing in his system. Because we saw what it looked like when they didn't play together in the system. And it wasn't good by any means, but it wasn't overwhelmingly embarrassing. It just felt like a young team in a modern system that didn't have all the right pieces. And, you know, listen, if they end up with the most losses in the NBA, it's a good thing. And I remember saying in the summer that, well, let's be honest, they're still multiple stars away and this upcoming draft is going to be a huge one. And hopefully they can get a big piece. And I still don't have any faith in point guards. So the truth is, and Joe Cowley talks about this all the time, and he's right. When you decide to tank and go young and rebuild and enter the lottery, very rare that it is you're in the lottery 1 or 2 years and you're out and you're back in playoff contention building towards champion. Like, it's really hard. And they only traded Jimmy, you know, what, before the 2017 draft. And we haven't had the 2019 draft yet. So we're still really, really early in the, you know, infant stages of this thing. But, yeah, I think Boylan has been embarrassing for Bulls fans and the Bulls. I don't see any scenario in which it works long term. So it feels like a wasted season of development trying to instill some sort of ambiguous culture. I don't necessarily freak out over LaVine's comments and the – you know, they were losing by, whatever, 12 a game under Hoiberg, and they were losing 17 a game under Boylan. Because if you're going to change things midstream and midseason, it's reasonable that there will be some regression. I think by the end of the year, they certainly should be better if the guys were healthy. But now Wendell Carter's hurt and all of that. What sucks is when you're bottoming out and you're tanking, you want to feel like you at least accomplished something in terms of development. And I don't think that at the end of this year, we're going to be very satisfied. Like, you've watched every minute of every game. I've watched a lot of games, and I usually start with the games, and then when I get disgusted, I turn them off. I'll ask you the same question I asked Cowley yesterday. I asked Will Perdue last week. Like, whenever I can stomach a Bulls guest, it's the first question that I ask. Like, has there been a single positive? Is there a single thing that night in and night out you enjoy watching? Has there been one thing?
Jordan, you want to field that one?
I mean, you look at everything that we've seen, Matt. I mean, over the last, what, 4 or 5 months of this season. I mean, like, in the short term of the last 2 weeks, Lowry being more aggressive in the last 3 games, probably that's it. I mean,
Chandler Hutchison starting to look not completely useless. I mean, yeah, the silver linings are few and far between.
Yeah.
Yeah, and listen, the Lowry thing, the Lowry thing, I will even... I'll be open-minded on that and say, you know, he missed the first 17 games with a sprained elbow and it impacted the end of his camp and it, it takes a minute to get your legs back, and then he comes back, and there's, you know, he plays one game under Fred, and then it's a new coach, and he's got no point guard talent. Like, I'll still reserve the right that Lowry could, at the end of the year, have like a great 30-game stretch to finish the season, and you'll feel really good about him going into year three. I think that's still in play, but as of right now, I mean, there's been nothing, at least from where I sit.
I think the biggest thing for Bulls fans to swallow right now is you look at some of the other teams around the league that are rebuilding, and specifically the one that the Bulls are going up against tonight in the Atlanta Hawks. They're another team that's rebuilding, but they're doing it in a way that the modern NBA is allowing you to do it, with players that the modern NBA needs you to do it in, Kevin Huerter and Trae Young and John Collins. And they've done it with acquiring assets. And, you know, this year, should it allow them to, they're going to have two picks in the top 10. And they're building for the future and adding assets and taking on those long-term contracts instead of, you know, taking flyers on guys like Jabari Parker. The Atlanta Hawks haven't done that. And sure, they made a move last year that at draft time could be devastating for them. They decided to switch and trade Luka Doncic for Trae Young, and that could have devastating consequences for the Hawks. But still, their talent, and you look at some other rebuilding teams, they look like they're making moves in the right direction as opposed to what the Bulls are doing right now, which kind of looks like stutter stepping. And, you know, I listened to the quote and it plays every single episode. It says, "We feel like we're in a better position than we were a year ago." And that's a quote direct from John Paxson's mouth a year ago. And I always think about that. And I think to myself, what does that sound like now? Are we in a better position than we were a year ago? And a lot of Bulls fans tell us now that we're not. And if you had to ask a Bulls fan right now, they probably think we're five steps behind where we were. The remaining 35 games of this season, and whether or not the Bulls end up with the top pick in this lottery draft, is if saving this team with the number one pick ends up being sort of that fortune that the Bulls need, or if this is just going to end up masking all of these problems that are underlying these issues with this team and this overall rebuild, because there's so much more than just landing Zion in order to fix all these problems with this Bulls team, because there's so much more than just that to fix what's wrong with this Bulls team.
You know, there is, but the old expression, it's better to be lucky than good, applies, sure, in my opinion. There's not a lot of examples. There are some. There are not a lot of examples of great NBA teams that didn't have tremendous luck. And I'm talking dynasties, right? The Bulls, lucky that Michael Jordan goes 3 instead of 2. The Spurs, lucky the 1 year that David Robinson is out and they tank and they come all the way to 1. It's Tim Duncan and not Keith Van Horn. The Celtics, lucky that some crazy Russian billionaire wants instant name recognition for his shiny new purchase and trades them all future first-round assets for old-ass Paul Pierce and company, and it turns into Danny Ainge stockpiling all of his pieces. The Cavs, lucky that they get the number one pick in LeBron James's year, the hometown kid. Conversely, the Milwaukee Bucks, unlucky that they get the number one pick in the year that it's 1 year after LeBron James, and they have to settle on Andrew Bogut, consensus number one pick that year. It's just, it's a tough thing, right? It's luck is a huge component of this. And so, like, that's why I always get frustrated when Pax will mention how unlucky they were with Derrick Rose's injury if he doesn't mention how lucky they were to get him in the first place. And sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't. But the truth is, they actually were luckier to get Derrick Rose than they were unlucky to have him tear an injury, right? He's 1% to 1.7%. To get Derrick Rose. So luck is a huge factor in this, even for the smart teams. And yes, it will mask things, and it will give guys job security that don't deserve it, but I'll still take the luck. And then the other thing, and I struggle with this because I know Bulls fans are out for blood for Garpax, and deservedly so, but I'll ask you guys. If you concede that they have job security for life, right? Like if you concede that, okay, when they traded Jimmy Butler, that was day zero of the most recent rebuild, and the John Paxson and Gar Foreman are going to be empowered to see this rebuild through. I don't know about the next rebuild, but this rebuild, from the moment they traded Jimmy Butler on, they get to be in charge of it. They traded Jimmy Butler ultimately at the right time. Minnesota has nothing left to show for 60 games of Jimmy Butler. They seem to have gotten the Lauri Markkanen pick correct in that at the very least, he's a high upside asset with value. Whatever you think of LaVine and Dunn, they are at a minimum. LaVine is a sixth man scorer on a championship team, and Dunn is a backup point guard with defensive talent on a team. Now, certainly maybe you could say that that's an overpay for what they gave up for him, but those are pieces. I think matching Zach LaVine's $78 million offer sheet is looking like the right decision. I think Wendell Carter is looking like a better player before the injury than anybody taken behind him. Maybe you'd say Kevin Knox. Maybe you'd say someone else. I don't know. But, like, it doesn't look like there's an egregious miss after Wendell Carter in that draft. And those are the biggest decisions that they've had, right? Trade Jimmy Butler, Lauri Markkanen top 10 selection, Wendell Carter top 10 selection since then. Now, they've messed up some of the PR stuff. They've messed up the Jim Boylan empowerment. They messed up bottom of the roster stuff with Spencer Dinwiddie being a prime example. He looked good on this team right now. They had a couple of shots at recognizing his talent and developing it. But I actually, and maybe you guys think I'm insane, but I actually think the big picture moves since the Jimmy Butler trade, they've done pretty well on. And then when you factor in, they got a shot at the number one pick in this year's draft and they're in a great cap position. I don't think they're in a horrible position long term if they land a superstar in the draft and sign someone competent in free agency. Do you guys disagree?
Not necessarily. Like you said, they have to get a few more things right in a string of getting some big picture things right. And namely, some of that is luck. Better to be lucky than good, as you said. Zion is clearly the prize of this draft, although there are a couple other interesting pieces that are, you know, fighting their way and juggling around, rounding out the top five. And to me, it is just as important that they get a new coach who responds well to and can relate to and can communicate with and inspire a young team that has struggled with winning games and closing games. So, yes, they have made some solid moves, and I still think that trading Jimmy when they did was the right call. Personally, I think they should have traded Jimmy a year before that when his trade value was even higher, as opposed to doing that completely, you know, that complete joke of a season with the three alphas and Wade and Rondo. Like, they should have rebuilt then, but at least they recognized a year after that and that failed experiment that it was time to start over. I agree with your assessment of the core pieces and what they have with them. And because of that, I would say, yes, you add another blue chip draft piece. Maybe you start to look like a young, interesting team that can attract free agents. And then of course that goes back to the problems that this organization has had attracting free agents and whether or not players want to come play here. But because you've mentioned it a couple times, Danny, let's touch on Chris Dunn as a piece of this core for a second, because this has been a really hot talking point. A lot of our texters and people calling in and leaving voicemails to Locked On Bulls are really starting to have their doubts with Dunn. I've been a Dunn defender coming into this season, saying, really, the kid just needs a stretch of games where he can stay healthy. His first season with the Bulls was so chopped up with injuries, and then unfortunately had another MCL sprain that knocked him out, you know, for a good chunk of this season. But he just looks so inconsistent, and now it's starting to look like he is not the point guard of the future. Guy's going to turn 25 years old in like a month. And you start to say, well, maybe there's only so much room he can do. He has to grow. That being the case, are you like, what is your solution or a proposed solution, or do you have one as far as if Dunn's not the guy, this young core, as exciting as it might be, still needs a starting point guard. But in my opinion, that wouldn't negate the Bulls taking clearly the winning piece of this draft, which is Zion. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, if they get the number one overall pick and Zion Williamson is some sort of Charles Barkley, LeBron James, Larry Johnson, Amari Stoudemire hybrid, like, obviously you just put that guy in, because let's not kid ourselves. It's not like the Bulls are stocked at small forward in the wing, and Zion clearly in this NBA will play much bigger than he is, right? Like, I don't think it's completely unreasonable that Zion Williamson could be a three with Lowry and Carter on the field, on the floor at the same time. I think you just add that talent and figure it out, and if you get it wrong, so be it. Though I think that RJ Barrett looks to me like an 8 to 10 year all-star also. That guy looks like he'll be able to score immediately in the NBA from anywhere. And they need a point guard. I've been telling you that ever since I've come on the show, I've been telling you guys that I've been low on Chris Dunn. I think that he is – I think the problem is with the Chris Dunn is that he's in the wrong era. He's got a role as being a try-hard, defensive, tough-nosed guy, but he –
So you're saying he's in the Jim Boylan era is what you're saying.
Yeah, seriously. Like, he just – man, point guard play is so good in the NBA, and it's mainly because of offense, right? Like Mike Conley is kind of an old-school point guard where he sets everybody up, and, he's a dish-first kind of point guard. He is so much better offensively than Chris Dunn. It's not even close. And Mike Conley is not even close to being a top five point guard in the NBA. So the gap between Dunn and a guy like who is maybe the idealized version of what he could be in Conley, and then the gap between Conley and a great point guard is so wide that you mentioned his age. I don't see that gap closing. And I watched that Pacers game when he had whatever it was, 17 assists or whatever right. That game was. It was awesome, but it's so few and far between. And I get it that part of it is the talent around him, and part of it's the injuries, and part of it's the changing systems. And just like a quarterback in the NFL going with a bunch of different offensive coordinators, it can stunt your development. And he was in Minnesota, and he had Tibbs, and he didn't have the playing time. And then he's in Chicago, and he's got Hoiberg, and now he's got Boylan. And he has not at all been put in an ideal situation to succeed. So not all of this is his fault. Far from it. But it seems obvious to me, like I was just the other day when they played the Cavs, when he went to the free throw line, they mentioned it on the radio broadcast. It was 103 floor minutes since his last free throw attempt. Right. That is a staggering thing for a point guard who has the ball in his hands as much as he does in this NBA, who's supposed to be attack first on the offensive end. So if he's not getting to the line and he's not finishing and his go-to move is still the mid-range, I don't see a high enough offensive ceiling to build around him. So maybe that kid from Murray State,
Ja Morant is the
consolation prize if you don't get Zion and you pray that he was a zero star recruit with limited scholarship offers who ends up at Murray State and is a sophomore instead of a freshman, but you just, hey, the comp is Russell Westbrook, and go get him if you don't get, Barrett or Zion. But that's not necessarily a plan. It's just a hope and a prayer.
In that scenario, hopefully Gar's obsession with Murray State pays off this time, because clearly
right.
the campaign love did not work out so well in his favor.
Yeah, but I mean, I try to be fair to Dunn and acknowledge that he's been put in an awful situation. I just, doesn't he reek of Marcus Smart? Isn't that what he is? Like in a best case scenario on a good team, he's a backup point guard who plays defense on a good team.
Yeah, yeah, truly. I mean, I was talking with my Bulls Outsiders crew just like last week, and somebody proposed that hypothetical. I was like, would you rather have Chris Dunn or Marcus Smart right now? And I think we all kind of rolled our eyes realizing the answer. We were like, I think I'd rather have Marcus Smart. Like, it's sad, but it's true.
Right now, absolutely. But Marcus Smart's been in the NBA. You know, he was in the Joel Embiid, Andrew Wiggins draft class. So he's got
right.
a lot more NBA miles on him to settle into his role. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not even saying right now today. I'm just saying I think that's where his career is going. Like, I think Chris Dunn will be in the NBA 8 years from now. You know what I mean? I think he will make tens of millions of dollars in the NBA. I think he is an NBA player. I just think he is the seventh best player on a good team, not a starting point guard.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. All right, Danny. And by the way, it's Danny Parkins of 670 The Score here joining us on Locked On Bulls. A couple more for you, Danny, then we'll let you go. Appreciate the time. Talking about this front office and how, I mean, you mentioned earlier, this fan base, there might not be a fan base, not only in the NBA, but in all the professional sports in this country that is more fed up with the people running its team than Bulls fans are with this front office. As you said, in their defense, it seems like some of the big picture moves they've made recently are respectable, if not quality. And leaving some kind of hope for the future. Obviously, injuries have been plaguing this team for years, and that stinks. Otherwise, their moves recently might look even better. But because of the recency of their transaction with Houston and the let's all laugh and have a good joke about Carmelo Anthony finally being a Chicago Bull after how many failed attempts, and then that plus the Michael Carter Williams transaction from a couple weeks ago, there's been, I mean, it's just such easy fodder for the front office haters on Bulls Twitter. And in my opinion, I think it's like it's an illness that's spreading across this fan base, because in a vacuum, those decisions were simple, smart, easy ones to make. You're talking about just doing a bit of clerical work, doing the Rockets a favor so that hopefully they owe you a favor down the line in potential future trade transactions. And in the meantime, you make a little bit of money for yourself. Now, clearly, the problem from a PR perspective and as far as what this fan base thinks about the ownership and front office is this team values money over winning. And moves like this only feed that narrative, as silly and trivial as it may be. $900,000 to the Bulls is chump change. Do you think it's fair how much scorn has been thrown at them for these little tiny transactions they've made with Houston just because they have an open roster spot and were able to do so? Or do you think it's like a sign of this fan base being so sick of the front office that even when it's something as simple as a clerical transaction like that, they get killed for it?
Yeah. I mean, they just don't have any benefit of the doubt. So in a season that's been as miserable as this one, damn well better believe that I'm going to get these jokes off when they, you know, trade for Carmelo Anthony, clear 900K, and trade the 32-year-old European draft rights of some dude that no one's ever heard of. You know, like, so that's just the price of doing business with a losing team. Like, you're going to have to take these jokes online and on radio and in columns, and they're not always fair. And hopefully that the people making those jokes, like you just outlined well, like I try to provide the context on the radio show, like, We they're just jokes. It's not a fireable offense to make 900K and use an extra roster spot to clear those guys. But why do you have an extra roster spot when it could have been Spencer Dinwiddie, who's averaging 17 a game, who was on your D-League squad? You know, like, and by the way, would help your point guard and backcourt situation, all of those things. So it's just they've earned the skepticism, they've earned the cynicism. So the move, it might end up being a good move. Honestly, it might be, hey, all right, that is what allows us to have to pay and buy out Jim Boylan at the end of the year. That move. And then it shouldn't be that way when they're still number one in attendance and they're printing money and all that. But we all know that the White Sox mean more to Big Reinsdorf than the Bulls do. And Michael Reinsdorf has maybe different ideas on how the Bulls should be run than his dad, but he has as much power as he's allowed to have right now, and maybe things will change in the future. But we all know that they're not operating at any loss, and that money does matter, and that they run the business for a profit, which you can't fault any capitalist for. But, you know, so there's reasons here to make the jokes, but I try to save my anger for the big ones, like the Jim Boylan embarrassment. They were the laughing stock of the NBA. They were the laughing stock of the NBA for weeks after that. That shouldn't happen. That's like a Sacramento Kings thing. That should not be a Chicago Bulls thing. Like that to me is worthy of your scorn. Making $900K by flipping a roster spot for Melo. Get your jokes off, make your 2014 jokes, enjoy it. But to me, those are not they matter, they should be noted, but they're not the things to get angry about.
Danny, before we let you go here, thinking back through your entire Bulls fandom as you watch this all unravel and then with 35 games left to play, is this the lowest point the entire Bulls fandom has been since, like, even thinking back to like early post Jordan years, like even back to 2000, 2001, like even to pre baby Bulls era, like even all of those times, is this the lowest point of it all? And when you think about the summer coming up and what year three of the rebuild would bring, what can they do? What can the front office do this summer? It would be able to do anything to change Bulls fans' opinions or minds about what they're doing right now to change the direction of all of this. Because it seems pretty simply that whether you're a casual Bulls fan who pays attention maybe once a month or once every couple of weeks, or you're a diehard who listens to every single one of our episodes, pays attention to every single one of the games every single day, people are pissed and they're disgusted by what they're watching and they're frankly fed up with everything. So twofold question here. Is this the lowest point? Can it get any lower than this? And what can they do this summer that in short can change some of the hope? Where does it go from here?
An old manager of the Kansas City Royals once said, and this was after they won the World Series in 85 and well before they won the World Series again in 2015. It was somewhere in the middle of the 29-year losing stretch that they had. He quipped to the media after a particularly embarrassing loss, "I'll never say it can't get worse." It absolutely can get worse. I mean, Lauri Markkanen could rupture an Achilles. Right.
Oh, God. Yeah. We're going to cut this.
You know what I mean? Like, it absolutely can get worse. Because they have they are in good cap position. They do have some young assets. They do have a real shot at the number one pick. So this has been awful, but it absolutely can get worse. Has it ever been worse in my time really following the Bulls? I don't know. Probably not. I remember the draft where they had the six picks and it was like Jake Boskal and Khalid Al-Amin and Marcus Fizer, and they got really nothing out of that. Like that kind of sucked. And then I was excited about Chandler and Curry and I was like, oh, that makes sense. Two high school seven footers. and it didn't work, you know, so like, but you also were still so closely removed from the dynasty that if you went to games at the United Center in any time between like 1999 and 2003, and I went to a lot of them, everybody was still just wearing Jordan and Rodman jerseys. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Everyone's just like, "Hey, let's go look at the banner. Hey, they opened a statue. How cool was that?" You know what I mean? Like, so So it didn't, like, it didn't hurt as much because we were still just totally glowing and appreciating what we had just had. And so this definitely feels like a low point. And then what they can do this off season, it's pretty simple to me. Like, they got to win the lottery. The biggest day for the Bulls in 2019 is NBA draft lottery night, period. That's it. These games, they don't really matter. They matter a little, you know, in terms of development and all of that. But we still, now with the Wendell Carter injury, like, we're going to go through this entire year, and at the end of the year, they're going to say, we still don't really know how LaVine, Carter, and Markkanen play together. How many games have they even played together?
Not many. Between last season of LaVine, Dunn, and Markkanen, and then this season of those three plus Wendell, it's like collectively 24, 25 games.
Yeah, so and I'll even remove Dunn. You know what I mean? Just like, yeah, if you're down on him, you know, it's such a small number. Because if you would rank Bulls assets right now, I assume we'd be in agreement that it would be Lowry 1, Carter 2, LaVine 3, just because those guys haven't gotten paid yet, right? Those are the top three in order.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, if you just said, how many games have your top three assets actually played together? It's got to be less than 20. And I should look that up. I should know the answer, because that's probably going to be the number at the end of the year. But it's – so they can still sell hope, but it just means that it was such a wasted season. So – what they can do this offseason is win the lottery, get Zion. That immediately makes them relevant. It immediately makes them interesting. And it immediately, like, he's a guy that NBA superstars might want to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And so that changes the stock completely. Obviously, I think that if the Pelicans are interested in trading Anthony Davis, the Bulls should be involved. Just to dangle the hometown hero thing in front of him. Everyone assumes he's going to go to the Lakers. I assume he's going to go to the Lakers, but for the...
Yeah, I think that's a pipe dream by this point. I think it's a dream at this point.
Yeah, I do too, but if Zion Williamson is 14% and Anthony Davis is 1%, I'd at least be open to the 1% if it comes through, you know?
Like, it's just true.
That's a thing, right? It's just it's a thing that could happen in a 1 in a million shot, 1 in 100 shot that would help this offseason. And then, other than that, nothing. And that doesn't mean that they couldn't draft RJ Barrett or Cam Reddish or Ja Morant, and ultimately it will look like a great pick. And maybe RJ Barrett's the next James Harden. That'd be awesome. The Bulls drafted James Harden. So it's just none of those other moves will come with the certainty of relevancy that Zion will bring. And that's the problem with sucking in the NBA. It's really hard to stop sucking.
It is. All right, Danny. It's self-promotion time. We know that you are one of the co-hosts of the McNeil and Parkin show here in Chicago, 670 The Score, weekday afternoons. And by the way, tell your co-host he takes too many vacation days. You've been holding that show down for the past several months, and I have great respect for that. But in addition to that, if that weren't enough, you also recently started a national show for CBS Sports Radio, Sirius 206, on Sunday evenings. Tell us a little bit and tell our listeners a little bit about what that show has going for it and what the experience has been like so far.
Well, yeah, I appreciate it. They offered it to me about 4 months ago, and I said yes instantly, even though it is not a ton of extra money, but it's some. And so that's cool. But it's working 6 days a week, and my wife and I have to have dinner a little earlier on Sundays and all that. But it's just a really cool opportunity because it gets to be the Danny Parkin show. So I have complete 100% creative control. And not that I don't have a tremendous amount of creative control on McNeil and Parkins, but, I've got a co-host. I have two producers. We have a program director who we have meetings with every day. So it's more of a collaborative effort, which is great. And it provides a lot of resources. There's not a ton of resources. There's no paid guests for a overnight national show on a Sunday night, but it's just totally my show. So if I'm putting on a guest, it's because they are my friends, which I love. And it is caller. There's more callers, which I don't necessarily love, but they love that as part of their network. And you kind of need it if you're monologuing for 4 hours without a ton of guests, given the time slot. It's cool. It's a lot of work because, you know, I'm on these past couple Sundays, I'm watching all the NFL games as if they were Bears games because I'm about to go do a show on a station that airs in New Orleans and airs in Kansas City and airs in Boston and airs in LA. And so it's that part of it is really cool and challenging and exciting. And I also, egotistically, I enjoy the ability to say that there's no one in the country who hosts more sports radio than I do. There are no
daytime. That is a pretty cool thing to be able to say.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there are no daytime 5 hour a day shows. You know, that some of the overnight hosts will do 5 hours. Arles Grobstein would be one of them. But then if you add in the 4 hours on Sunday, you know, there's some people that do a couple shifts on some of the different Sirius channels. There's some people in New York. There's a guy in New York who does he's a co-host, sidekick on an afternoon show. And then he does a shift on a hip hop station. And so he does as much radio as I do, but he's not hosting all of it. He's the third guy on their afternoon show. But like at the end of the other part is music. So it's different. So in terms of sports talk radio, no one in the country is hosting more live hours of radio a week than me, which for a radio dork and someone who prides himself on his work ethic and having reached a decent amount of success at a pretty young age, I'm pretty happy about that. I don't know how long I'll do it in terms of those hours, and we'll see. But, you know, at least for, you know, I just agreed to a 2-year extension with the Score. And so I expect to do the national show for at least that length of time. And we'll see where this crazy business goes.
29 hours of sports talk radio a week McNeil and Parkins here, 670 The Score, and his new Danny Parkins show on CBS Sports Radio National. And yet, he still makes time to talk to us on Locked On Bulls about a team that is 11-36. Danny, that is why you are getting so much respect and credit in this great sports town. Keep up the amazing work. We so appreciate you taking the time for us, man.
Yeah, guys, I'll always take the time for you guys. You guys do a great job, and I enjoy following your careers and successes, and it's cool that people are recognizing it. So thank you guys very much for being interested and giving me the time.
Absolutely, Danny. All right, take care, man. Have a great show today.
All right, thanks, guys.
Have a good one.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Want to thank again Danny Parkins for jumping on the show. You can hear him weekdays 1 to 6 p.m. on The Score, and Sundays now 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Central Time on CBS Sports Radio, Sirius XM 206, McNeil and Parkins show, and now nationally, CBS Sports Radio. So congrats, Danny, on the national gig, as well as all the success here in Chicago on 670 The Score. Follow him on Twitter at Danny Parkins. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Maui, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Maui. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Maui and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com